This is the daily radio ministry of Pastor Sandy Adams of Calvary Chapel Stone Mountain in Atlanta, Georgia. Pastor Sandy is currently teaching through the book of Genesis. And now here's Pastor Sandy in the book of Genesis chapters 4 through 6.
Cain married his sister. Tradition tells us, in fact, that Adam and Eve had 33 sons and 27 daughters. You could get lost in that family. There could probably be a brother or sister you didn't even know. Think about this. If you started out with 27 couples, and each of those 27 couples had 6 kids, within 100 years, you'd have a population of 40,000 people. Cain had plenty of women to choose from to pick his wife. It seems that marriage between brothers and sisters is not intrinsically evil. It becomes evil when it's prohibited by the law of Moses out of necessity. By the time of Moses, the human gene pool had been weakened, and for health reasons, God prohibited the practice. But apparently, in the beginning, the descendants of Adam and Eve were free to intermarry, and you see that in some of the early chapters of Genesis. Genesis chapters 4 through 6 is a valuable section of Scripture because it gives to us one of the very few pictures we have of the antediluvian world, or the earth before the flood of Noah. And the Genesis account tracks the development of two families. The family of Cain, which was a worldly carnal clan, and the family of Adam's son Seth, which was a faithful family. Well, Cain's family is listed first. And Cain built a city and called the name of the city after the name of his son, Enoch. Now, since God no longer allowed Cain to work the earth, he built a city. He becomes the first urbanite, the first city dweller. Cain becomes the first businessman. Unable to grow his own food, he now becomes a barterer. And he becomes a businessman and he begins to trade and sell. Verse 18 tells us, to Enoch was born Irad, which means wild man. His mom and dad had a problem. And Irad begat Mahujael, which means blot out the name of God. What an evil thought that was. Who would have named their child blot out the name of God? Notice next, and Mahujael begat Methushael, and that name means those who are of God are dead. Notice the names get increasingly evil and blasphemous, just as does the family of Cain. Remember, Cain chose to separate himself, to leave the presence of God, and he suffered the consequences. Verse 18, and Methushael begot Lamech. Then Lamech took for himself 2 wives. The name of one was Adah, and the name of the second was Zillah. One wife wasn't enough for Lamech.
Well, I'm too much of a man for just one woman.
And so he married 2, Adah and Zillah. Here is the originator of polygamy. And of course, Lamech's punishment was inherent to his crime. With those 2 wives, he got 2 mother-in-laws. Joke's on him. Hey, Lamech was guilty of some serious sin. He was the first person to tamper with God's rules concerning sex and marriage. The name Lamech means bringing low, and that's what Lamech did to the human race by engaging in polygamy. Well, verse 20 tells us, and Adah bore Jabal. Lamech had 3 sons, Jabal, Jubal, and Tubal-Cain. And all 3 names come from the root word, which means to produce or to invent. Lamech's 3 sons represent an age of technological advancement. Jabal was the father of those who dwell in tents and have livestock. Jabal was the first cowboy. He was the first cattle rancher. He was the first one to domesticate and grow animals for food. His brother's name was Jubal. He was the father of those who play the harp and flute. Jubal was the first musician. And as for Zillah, she also bore Tubal-Cain, an instructor of every craftsman in bronze and iron, the first metal worker. So we have the first cattle rancher, we have the first musician, and we have the first metal worker. And the sister of Tubal-Cain was Naamah. It's interesting. Evolutionary propaganda assumes that the ancients were primitive people and that they gradually advanced in knowledge and know-how. But apparently that's not true. All over the world, there are ancient stories of advanced civilizations that were lost in a global flood. The legend of Atlantis, if you're familiar with it, may be a faint recollection of a world before the flood. I believe that the antediluvian world featured a highly sophisticated society that in some ways it might even rival our modern world today. Just study the pyramids of Egypt or Stonehenge in England. They are examples of incredible technology that existed in the pre-flood world. We know that Adam had a brilliant intellect. He was able to name all of the animals in a short period of time. It's probable that his immediate descendants were also very smart people. Now, here's the picture that we get of this pre-flood world. The antediluvians, they were advanced technologically, but they were corrupt morally and deviant spiritually. Listen to Lamech's boast in verse 23. Then Lamech said to his wives, Adah and Zillah, "Hear my voice, wives of Lamech. Listen to my speech. For I have killed a man for wounding me, even a young man for hurting me. If Cain shall be avenged sevenfold, then Lamech 77-fold." In other words, Lamech is saying, God avenges sevenfold, but if you mess with me, buddy, I'll avenge myself 77-fold. I'm tougher than God. That's what he's saying. How arrogant. Lamech was a leading example of this defiance that existed before God prior to the flood. And this is more relevant to you and I than you might think. Because Jesus says in Luke chapter 17, verse 26, "As it was in the days of Noah, so it will also be in the days of the Son of Man." Well, how was it in the days of Noah? Great technological advancement, and yet corrupt morally, deviant spiritually. That combination was what existed in the days of Noah. Jesus is saying that the end times will be characterized by that same combination. Great technology, but extreme arrogance and defiance against God. Can you think of a time where that scenario might fit? Today could be the day, couldn't it? Verse 25 tells us, "And Adam knew his wife again." And you know, when it says Adam knew his wife, it doesn't mean that they had a conversation. It means that they had sexual relationships. "And he knew his wife again, and she bore a son and named him Seth. For God has appointed another seed for me instead of Abel, whom Cain killed." The word Seth means appointed. "And as for Seth, to him also a son was born, and he named him Enosh," which like Enoch means dedicated. And we're told, "Then men began to call on the name of the Lord." With Seth, revival occurred. And over the next 1,500 years of human history, God will use Seth and his faithful family, his descendants, as a witness to his truth in this ever-increasingly wicked world. In fact, chapter 5 shifts to the family of Seth and to his genealogy. It begins in verse 1 with his father Adam. "This is the book of the genealogy of Adam. In the day that God created man, he made him in the likeness of God. He created them male and female and blessed them and called them mankind in the day they were created. And Adam lived 130 years and begat a son in his own likeness after his image and named him Seth." Notice the sad digression here. Adam bore the image of God. You remember what was unique about Adam's creation was that he was made in the image and in the likeness of God. But here, Adam's son Seth bears Adam's image. A marred and a distorted version of what man was originally intended to be. Well, after he begot Seth, the days of Adam were 800 years, and he had sons and daughters. So all the days that Adam lived were 930 years, and he died. This was not God's original plan for Adam, remember. He could have lived forever, but God told him that if he ate the forbidden fruit, if he disobeyed God, he would surely die. Remember, the wages of sin is death. Well, verse 6, Seth lived 105 years and begat Enosh. And after he begat Enosh, Seth lived 807 years and had sons and daughters. So all the days of Seth were 912 years, and he died. Enosh lived 90 years and begat Canaan. After he begat Canaan, Enosh lived 815 years and had sons and daughters. So all the days of Enosh were 905, and he died. Canaan lived 70 years and begat Mahalalel. After he begat Mahalalel, Canaan lived 840 years and had sons and daughters. And so all the days of Canaan were 910 years, and he died. Mahalalel lived 65 years and begot Jared. After he begot Jared, Mahalalel lived 830 years and had sons and daughters. So all the days of Mahalalel were 895 years, and he died. Jared lived 162 years and begat Enoch. And after he begot Enoch, Jared lived 800 years, and he had sons and daughters. So all the days of Jared were 962 years, and he died. Are you noticing the repetition? From Adam all the way down to Jared, over and over the phrase, and he died, and he died, and he died, like father, like son. All Adam's kin shared in his sin and in his end. He died. The wages of sin is death. But there was one exception, verse 18. Enoch lived 65 years and begat Methuselah. And after he begot Methuselah, Enoch walked with God 300 years and had sons and daughters. So all the days of Enoch were 365 years. It's implied here that Enoch didn't walk with God until he had kids. And if that's so, the miracle of childbirth, coupled with the responsibilities of fatherhood, probably woke him up to his need for God. And that's not the first man that's happened to. It's amazing how the miracle of childbirth and the responsibilities of fatherhood can wake a man up to his need for God. Verse 24, and Enoch walked with God, and he was not, for God took him. Once there was a little girl who was reciting this story to her mom, and this is how she put it. One day, Enoch and God walked together. They took a walk together, Mom. They walked and they talked and they walked and they talked until Enoch finally said, Lord, it's getting late. I better go home. But the Lord said, Enoch, we've been walking together for so long. I believe we're closer to my house than to your house. Why don't you just come on over to my house tonight? Well, hey, that may have been just exactly the way it happened. I think we all should desire a walk so close to God, so intimate with God, that our hearts become more in tune with heaven than they become in tune with earth. Enoch means dedicated, and he walked so close to God that God decided to do a little rapture practice. And he snatched up Enoch. He desired his fellowship so much. He said, Enoch, come and be with me. And Enoch was not. In fact, Jude chapter 14 explains just how much Enoch knew of God and his plans. He was so intimate with God, he was privy to God's plans. In fact, Jude verse 14 tells us that Enoch was a prophet and what he prophesied. It says, behold, the Lord comes with 10,000s of his saints to execute judgment on all. Isn't this amazing? Enoch was seventh from Adam, but he was already proclaiming the second coming of Jesus Christ. Isn't that interesting? That's how intimate he was with the plans and with the knowledge of God. Well, verse 25. Methuselah lived 187 years and begot Lamech. After he begot Lamech, Methuselah lived 782 years and had sons and daughters. And so all the days of Methuselah were 969 years, and he died. You've heard the phrase, as old as Methuselah? Well, this man has the oldest recorded age in history. And that becomes more than just an answer to a trivia question. When you realize that his father, Enoch, was a prophet, and that the son, Methuselah, was a prophecy. Methuselah was God's prophetic timepiece. Here's what his name means. When he dies, it will be sent. That's what Methuselah means. When he dies, it will be sent. And guess when Methuselah died? The very year that the flood came. He died the same year that God began to judge the earth with water. And of course, this highlights for us God's patience, God's mercy, God's grace. For when God ties a coming judgment to a particular lifespan, he doesn't choose some guy that lived 30 years or some guy that lived 70 years. No, he chooses a guy who lived 969 years. He chooses the one man who's lived the longest than anybody else. Obviously, God doesn't like judgment, does he? Obviously, God doesn't want to judge the earth. He desires that we repent. He desires that we be saved. That's why he says, when this guy dies, and he lived and lived and lived to be 969 years before judgment came. It's an example of God's mercy, God's patience, and his desire to save. Notice too, there were three groups of people alive at the time of Noah's flood. First of all, there was the wicked. They are the ones that will drown in the deluge. The second group of people are Noah's family. They're the ones that are protected in the midst of the storm. And then there's a third group of people alive at the time of the flood. Enoch. He was the one that God caught up prior to the judgment coming down. He experienced the flood not on the earth but in heaven under God's protection. And note the typology here. For the next time that the earth will be judged by God, at the end of the age, during the great tribulation, there will also be three groups of people represented. There will be the wicked that will be judged in the tribulation. There will be the Jews who, like Noah and his family, are protected by God in the midst of the storm here on the earth. But there's a third group of people, the church, who, like Enoch, will go up before the judgment comes down and will experience that final judgment with Jesus by his side under his protection in heaven. Well, Seth's genealogy continues in verse 28. Lamech lived 182 years and had a son, and he called his name Noah, which means comfort or rest. This one will comfort us concerning our work and the toil of our hands because of the ground which the Lord has cursed. After he begot Noah, Lamech lived 595 years and had sons and daughters. So all the days of Lamech were 777 years, and he died. And Noah was 500 years old, and Noah begot Shem, Ham, and Japheth. Now, excluding Enoch, the average age of the men in chapter 5 is 908 years old. And some of these geezers, notice, are still having children after having been alive for several hundred years. I mean, we're told in verse 32 that Noah sired three sons at the age of 500. Guys, it's never too late. Also, they all birthed sons and daughters, multiples. Now, how many kids do you think you could have if you were baby-making for over 500 years? This is why I believe that the earth was as populated before the flood as it is today, maybe even more so. And of course, the question comes up in our minds, how did people live 900 years? Remember in Genesis chapter 1, verse 7, God divided the waters from below the sky from the waters above the sky, above the firmament. And some scholars believe that the water above referred to more than just simple water vapor in the air, in the atmosphere. They believed that before the flood, there was a dense, highly compacted vapor canopy that existed in the upper levels of our atmosphere. The oldest book that's written, the book of Job, seems to speak of this vapor canopy in chapter 38, verse 9. There God says, "When I made the clouds its garment and thick darkness its swaddling band." It's interesting that the latest theories on aging point to the sun as the culprit. Theoretically, the human body should be able to rejuvenate itself indefinitely. But around the age of 25, remember back to 25? Around the age of 25, the body starts to deteriorate. Some scientists believe that it's the solar radiation that sends a signal to the DNA that triggers the aging process. But if this canopy shrouded and shielded the earth from much of this harmful radiation, people could have lived much, much longer. The aging process could have been delayed, you know, by hundreds of years. In addition, with this vapor canopy, the antediluvian world would have been a virtual paradise. Global temperatures would have been constantly right around 72 degrees. Storms, even rain, would be non-existent since hot air would never collide with cold air. The world before the flood would have been a tropical paradise. There would have been lush vegetation from pole to pole. The earth would have been a colossal greenhouse in essence. It's interesting that all around the world, there's impressive evidence for this idea. Fossilized palm trees have been found above the Arctic Circle. In Siberia, we found those frozen woolly mammoths with tropical vegetation still in their mouths. Which brings up the question, woolly mammoths, what happened to the dinosaurs? Well, I personally believe that the dinosaurs were among the animals on Noah's Ark. They lived in the antediluvian world, and they were contemporaries of man. We found cave drawings of dinosaurs put there by human artists. In fact, the Bible describes two animals that sound amazingly like dinosaurs. Go home and read Job chapters 40 and 41. There are creatures that many people would call dinosaurs alive on the earth today in remote parts of the world. In 1977, what some people think was a plesiosaur was snagged 900 feet underwater near Christchurch in New Zealand. You can go back on the internet and you can pull up a picture of it. I believe that Noah carried every kind of dinosaur on board the ark. But don't think of adult dinosaurs. He brought aboard babies or even dinosaur eggs. The extinction of the dinosaurs occurred shortly after they exited the ark. This collapsed vapor canopy and the upheaval that the flood caused upon the earth changed the topography, changed the climate, changed the vegetation, and the dinosaurs could no longer survive in the post-flood ecosystem. Well, chapter 6 describes the perversion that I believe led to the destruction of this antediluvian world. It says, "Now it came to pass when men began to multiply on the face of the earth, and daughters were born to them, that the sons of God saw the daughters of men, that they were beautiful. And they took wives for themselves of all whom they chose. And the Lord said, My spirit shall not strive with man forever, for he is indeed flesh, yet his days shall be 120 years." Now understand, God is omnipotent or all-powerful. God is omniscient or all-knowing. God is omnipresent or all-present. He's present everywhere, but God is not omnipatient. There are limits to God's patience. There are boundaries to his long-suffering.
That concludes the teaching portion of today's broadcast with Pastor Sandy Adams of Calvary Chapel, Stone Mountain in Atlanta, Georgia. Join us next time as Pastor Sandy continues teaching through the first book of the Bible, Genesis. You can learn a great deal about Pastor Sandy by visiting our website. The web address is sandyadams.org. That's sandyadams.org. Simply click on the radio program option from the main menu. When you click on the radio program option at the website, you'll find today's message and many other messages from Pastor Sandy. You can download today's teaching, listen again, subscribe to the podcast, or browse the archive of messages. If you live in the Stone Mountain, Georgia area, or will be visiting anytime soon, you can get directions and times for our worship services. Again, the website for all this information is sandyadams.org. We love hearing how God's Word touches the lives of His followers. So please log on to sandyadams.org and click on the Contact Us link and send us a note about how today's message has encouraged you. Your feedback helps us tremendously. Once again, you've been listening to the Daily Bible Teaching Program of Pastor Sandy Adams. Please tune in next time as we continue through the book of Genesis. That's next time on Sandy Adams Radio.